Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Sister Wasifa Tarver, and Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, as we connect with women everywhere and learn how to form healthy relationships. Collectively, we can heal our world, but first, we need to heal ourselves. Call in and join our discussion. 347-539-5639. Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and I've got my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, y'all. Salaam Salaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. And for those of all you all who don't know, assalamu alaikum means peace be unto you, and wa alaikum salam means and upon you be peace also. So, of course, there are many people around the world who listen to us every day, and we appreciate your listening and participation. And for today's discussion, if you want to call in and join in, give us a call at 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. Today we hope to be joined by Reverend Sean McMillan, who is the National Director of Economic Justice for the Rainbow Push Coalition, and they have been focusing on getting justice for those who have relatives, friends, loved ones in the prison system, because the phone company has really turned this into a profitable business. They charge inmates $15 a call if they want to call home. And, you know, usually, of course, they don't have the money to do that, so they reverse the charges. So that means if you're calling from prison and you're trying to reach your mother who's missing you, your sister, your brother, your spouse, you got to pay $15 a minute. So for 5 minutes of a little bit of a conversation, you're paying $75. So most people really can't afford that. So that's one of the ways you end up isolated and devastated by the process of being separated from your family. And what Reverend Jackson and his organization and many others who realize that prison really should be a time of spiritual renewal and rehabilitation, they realize that this is not only punishing the prisoner, but it's punishing the families, and it's not really enabling families to keep that connection that could, in fact, help the person who's behind bars to develop in a positive way during that time, because, you know, they need to hear positive encouragement from family. And the phone company is basically profiting from the misery and the poverty of people. So today there's a meeting at Cook County building here in Chicago, and at the regular Cook County board meeting, there are a number of families who have just about got their phones cut off, trying to keep contact with their loved ones and by phone because the bill is so high. So Reverend Jackson is leading a protest in addressing the board about stopping this very exploitive practice. And unfortunately, so many of us have people in jail. It's almost a common occurrence, so common that it's expected that every black man in America, matter of fact, I believe the current statistics are something like 60% of all African-American men are in some form involved in the criminal justice system. Either they're in jail or they're on parole or they've been arrested. You know, and they've just begun to profit from the criminal justice system. It's such a big business, and now everybody's getting a piece of the pie. Now the phone company is finding a way to exploit the fact that we don't really have good legal representation, or that we're kind of restricted in the way our young men can earn a living, and a lot of it ends up in jail, or we're in such an emotional state such a devastated spiritual and emotional state that we seek illegal drugs for relief and end up in jail, or, you know, all kinds of things that cause us to end up in jail, and then people make money off of us. So we'll be talking about that today. But, you know, I want to take a look at, really at the whole situation of being in jail and what could be happening while you're in that state of being separated from society. We know that these are wounded souls, people who have made bad judgments, people who are hurting on the inside, and they hurt themselves and others. But rather than exploit their pain, what could we be doing if we were to visit those who have committed crimes? So we want to talk about that. And I know some of you, of course, you have counseled people in all situations in life. What do you find is a common thing for people who have done jail time? What tends to be the thing inside of them that's broken that causes them to somehow make those wrong choices and lead them to imprisonment? Would you say that you have noticed there are more people that are in jail for petty things as opposed to, like, major crimes? You know, there's a stigma attached to going to jail, and usually it causes people to have fear of you and who you are and assume things about you. But I've found in my doing work in prisons with women who needed to pass a parenting class in order to get their children back who had been taken from DCFS, I found that these were usually, of course, women of lower economic standards, which usually is connected to lack of education. So when you really don't have a lot of knowledge and you don't have a lot of options, and then sometimes the self-esteem of women is so low, a lot of times they've been the victim of rape, and that does something so devastating to your self-esteem that you just lose your sense of self-worth. Somebody's violated your body. So that sets a lot of things in motion, everything from drug addiction to alcoholism, and then attracting people who tend to do criminal acts because your own vibration is so low. You're attracting that which you are on that level of feeling badly about yourself. And what I found that was the first step really in helping people was to deal with their loss of self-esteem. And going to jail, you know, you're already treated like you're dirt. You know, so if you're feeling badly about yourself and you're put in a place where people treat you like you're worthless, then, of course, it just makes whatever your internal problem is worse because you can never find encouragement unless you can reach out to people who love you, your family, and so forth. You can never come out of that sense of nothingness, which makes you do wrong in the first place. So how do you help a person who has been made to feel badly about themselves and has done bad things because they feel badly about themselves? How do you help them reverse that trend of self-destruction?
Is this Naima?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. And the women that I have met that are lost, I always refer them to the fact that there is a higher power, God, that loves them, but they don't feel loved. And many of our young people, you know, many of us, unfortunately, I was meditating on that this morning before I came on your show. The dysfunction in our families then is so great that you have a whole history of people, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers. And in viewing these people, as I've gone through my own evolvement from abuse and meeting those when I worked for the Bureau of Prison, that were coming out of the prison system when I was a young woman, it's very difficult. And the work that I do, coming from the spirit realm, as I understand, and understanding and loving as the higher power has given me, they have very low self-esteem. You know much because of your own experiences. You're right on target. But what I do is one young lady, I just met her just as casually as I'm waiting to go where I needed to go. She had alcohol on her. And she, one thing she said, "Are you okay?" I'm like sitting on the steps waiting for my ride. And she came past me two times. She said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Well, thank you so much for caring." And when she sat down next to me, she reeked of alcohol. And this is a young lady. And so she's telling me her little problem with her significant other and how he talks to her really bad and all that. So my heart always for men and women, because I have a nephew and grandson, one is in Cook County Jail and one just came out of the boot camp. He was in Cook County and they put him in the boot camp and then he was on house arrest. So I'm saying to you, you're right about how this affects all of us, and we have someone that's been incarcerated in our family, extended family. But anyhow, in speaking with her, my heart, you know, I knew to say to her that you are loved and that God loves you. And you learn to love yourself. I said, forgive yourself for anything that you have done and know that you can evolve, you can make it, and you can be better. Look how you cared about me. You don't even know me. And you kept asking me, was I okay? You are a worthy person. And I went through there's a program we have that I don't know if people realize, 12-step is for recovering addicts and what have you. And that program does work. And first of all, it asks you to admit that you are powerless, that you're out of control, and that there is a higher power that can help you. And I just talked to her in that way of having been a wife of a heroin addict, drug addict, and someone that had been incarcerated. I went through a program for spouses. So I know over the years how to work with people. And I just say to you, Sister Naima, you've been in the situation where you've dealt with these women. And you and I and others like us are out here to help, and we're outside of, quote unquote, the church structure. But if we can get our people to understand there are alternatives, which is very hard, because we're programmed to go to the church, and then those who are outside of the church, they don't feel good enough to walk into a church door, whatever the reason. Yeah. So the work we do is you go to the prison, as the reverend goes to the prison, you guys go inside. But let me share something that someone told me that I knew years ago, that you got them, they're in a trapped situation, but what are they going to do when they come out? Where is our support system for these people when they come out of the prison system? And we don't have much in our community. There are some churches I always recommend. I know a lot of recovering addicts that go to Reverend Brazier's church. This is before he passed, and I'm sure some are going now. And one of the things they told me about Reverend Brazier's church, that, you know that thing that he used to say, that even if you're a dirty rag, God loves you? Yes. These people's self-esteem are so low. They need to be told this. They need to be encouraged that even though they may be doing wrong, have done wrong, that there is love of their for them, and we have to recognize that as people out here working with them. And this is what I do for people like yourself. I admire you and all of you that go into the incarcerated institution. I was not led to do that. The higher power led me to be outside the system to support as much as I had, but I also had to go through and learn what that was about for myself. And so I do know that I'm out here working, as you are still, helping and supporting these people. Because, you know, you make contact with them, and I make contact with people that are out here already that have been incarcerated. So it's an everyday flow. And for the few of us that are out here working, it's sad. And as I said, I was reflecting on that this morning, about those who I've made contact with. And I just heard a story yesterday, somebody that has attempted suicide. Oh, and the woman called me, and this is just, I'm talking about emotional and mental issues that we have. So the interesting thing about it is that this self-destructive behavior that we have in our community because we don't have the support system to help. Where do we go? Where do we go? And if we end up with a psychiatrist or a psychologist, they're going to give us medication when it's a deep wound of the spirit that is the problem in our community. And how do you minister spiritually? So few of us are out here. I know it's hard for me out here. It's very hard for me to get people to understand. I have a women's group for that woundedness, for women, whether they come out of the penitentiary system or whatever. But to get someone to come to my meeting, which is about emotional and mental support and education as to who and what we are, you know, it's very difficult. And this is what I'm reflecting and meditating on right now about this, trying to get to the universe to bring, and you have to be, I myself have to, I'm a metaphysician, and I believe that you can create whatever you want because God has given us that power. So I'm working on that spiritually. I do have meetings on Saturdays over here in Chicago, Illinois, in Hyde Park. On Saturdays, the next meeting will be December the 17th, and it's open for African descendant women and also any other person that would like to call me to talk with me. I came under some women that were from Alabama and Mississippi. They mentored me when I was 20, and they helped me to overcome my depression. I had a nervous breakdown, and these women helped me to come up out of that. I was going to put myself in the hospital, and a voice said to me, hang up the phone. And then the lady next door said, you know, there's a Reverend Bell, darling, that you need to see. So that was depressed, what they would call clinically depressed. I would cry. Yeah. I had a job. I couldn't even go to work. But the point I'm making is this. Yeah. We need spiritual help before we go to the psychiatrist and all of these people. We need to understand there are alternatives, and I offer that to my people to help them to understand what their emotional and mental issues are. I was helped. These women were not high school educated. They was women straight from Alabama and Mississippi. Now, they all have gone over to the other side, and I'm here as someone who understands that if we understood what it took, I hate to see us get caught up in the mental health profession because all they want to do is medicate you.
Right, and they don't deal with the cause of the pain. And because our mind, body, and spirit is connected, whenever you are down in spirit, it affects your body chemistry. So your depression becomes chemical depression because your body is then not able to release the kind of chemicals, the kind of endorphins, the kind of uplifting substances that will keep you in a state of high energy and joy and happiness. So you are depressed. You are chemically depressed. And so if you
are... It affects you emotionally and mentally.
Absolutely. It affects you emotionally and mentally. So if you're able to lift the spirit, then everything else is lifted from that. And that's part of what a person's got to understand. If they're going to the prisons where people are the most depressed, Not only are they depressed because they're in that situation, but they are depressed because of whatever caused them to get in that situation.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
how you got to deal with the healing of the spirit. So, you know, unfortunately in this society, we condemn people who do wrong as opposed to forgiving, like Jesus was teaching. You know, you forgive people, you teach people, you help uplift them, you show them you love them. That's how you heal. But we, you know, ignore all that, and the first thing we do is condemn and ostracize them and make them unlovable. And so they remain in that low state of depression and self-degradation because they believe they're unworthy. So you're right. The first thing to be able to tell prisoners is that they are worthy of love. They're a good person. God loves you, and you are lovable, you know? And, and people have to feel that they are worthy of good treatment. So when you put a person who is already, for whatever reason, feeling badly about themselves, you put them in an environment where they're constantly being spoken to as if they're trash. They're subject to beatings, or they're in a place that is like a cage where they maybe feel like an animal. All it does is further break the spirit. There's no way you can rehabilitate somebody who's wounded. That's like taking somebody who accidentally cut themselves and they're bleeding, and so you get a knife and cut them some more. You know, I mean, it's the same. Why are we adding pain to pain when, in fact, people need they need love, they need recovery, they need treatment of the spirit. And what I found
yes.
with the women that I was working with, the first session, you know, I'd go into the jail, and these women would be the ones who lost their children because the state took them away because, you know, they'd been either prostituting or drugs, whatever, but they neglected their children. They committed some crime. So anyway, they could not get their children back when they got out unless they had passed a parenting course in the jail. So I was conducting the parenting class. And the first session would always be, I'd have them, you know, talk about themselves and you know, what they hope to get out of the session, you know, talk about their feelings for their children and that kind of thing. You know, I didn't start out with, what did you do wrong? You know, because I know that's a very personal thing. And, you know, we had to grow towards mutual trust in order to get to that level. But what I found with most of them, with really, I'd say 100% of them, something happened in their lives that made them feel worthless. A lot of them had been molested or violated as children or neglected. Or abused either verbally or emotionally by their parents. And at a very early age, they were made to feel worthless. And so they just followed that path that had been set for them. And some of them, you know, ended up with following the wrong kind of men who got them involved in crime, and they're trying to get love from a man, so they do this drug run for him, or they sell their bodies for him, or whatever the case is, they end up doing wrong, trying to win the love of another wrongdoing person because their self-esteem was so low. So, you know, you have children, as a woman, if you don't feel good about yourself and you have a child, how are you going to make that child feel good about themselves? And some of them, and this is something we got to recognize also with young women who get pregnant, sometimes they get pregnant to have a baby because the baby is somebody who will love them. So they're looking
mm-hmm.
for someone to love them. And that's what
that's
a
true.
Lot of young women say, I wanted somebody to love me. And so they have a baby. Well, the baby gives you unconditional love. That's what they do.
Yes.
So, you know, this is where the battle is. It's in the spirit. It's helping heal the wounded spirit so that a person
yes.
knows that they are worthy of love. And that's the first step that I talk about in my book, The Female Solution. Usually that wounded child is wounded from early on with either an angry mother or a hurt mother, you know, or a hurt father, you know, some adult person who is not spiritually well. So hurt people hurt people. And the jail is full of hurt people. That's who commits the crime, people who are hurt, people who don't have a sense of self-worth. So, and, you know, when companies exploit that and they know that, you know, you're poor, you're impoverished, you need your family, and you need to reach out to somebody, so you call and you got to reverse the charges because you don't have money to pay for it in jail, and they're charging you $15 an hour.
Ridiculous.
They're profiting from our pain. And I'm glad that that's being addressed today at the Cook County meeting here in Chicago. But all across the country, I mean, you have companies that are using prison labor to make products. You have companies that are using prisoners to do telemarketing. I mean, you might get a call from somebody trying to sell you some, you know, windows or siding or whatever, and they're calling from a jail cell. I mean, they're calling from a prison institution because it's very low, nearly slave wages, if anything at all. And so everybody's profiting from those who are in pain instead of reaching out to heal them so that we don't have people who are in prison. We don't have people that are taking drugs or doing crime to support drugs or doing crime just to have money because they don't have a sense of the worth of other people because they don't have any sense of their own self-worth. So this is the kind of work that you and I do in restoring people to their spiritual health by connecting them to the divine being.
Yes.
And like you say, you know, the churches, they're stuck on reading stories about the past and Bible stories, which a person who's hurting really can't necessarily, unless a preacher is very skilled in being able to make that connection.
Yes.
Most of the time, what you learn in church, it seems just irrelevant because it doesn't address your own personal pain. So unless a man or woman who is part of that structured religious teaching has real spiritual insight and they're able to help you connect between this person's life story in the past and their experience in the past and what it taught them and what it can teach you in your present day, unless they really have divine guidance and inspiration on how to help you make the connection so that you can learn something, you end up learning a bunch of history lessons that don't really help your soul.
It doesn't affect you personally.
It doesn't affect you personally. So that's why.
It's not practical.
It's not practical. So, I meet all these doctors of divinity and this and that, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And so ineffective in helping people.
Yes.
And they don't know they're ineffective because they don't know that the real work is to reach the soul of the person, to touch
yes.
their heart, to give them love. That's the real ministry. And if you're not doing that, then you're really wasting time because you're not helping them where they need help. And, sister, with your meetings, unfortunately, a lot of people who need help are the ones who don't seek out. Because people who come to you, they're at the level where they recognize they need the help. But there's a vast number of people who need the help and haven't figured it out yet. So as you grow even in strength physically, you'll find yourself going to them, going to the women's shelters, going to the places where broken women are. Because they're not at the level to recognize they need the help. So may our Creator give you strength because that is your mission, to take the message to those who are in need.
And one of the things for me personally as a woman who also has went through the abuse issue of growing up and breaking through because of, I believe I use the word anointing that God has placed on me. I've been through health challenges, and I appreciate you recognizing that I have to become stronger and stronger physically to go out, and I appreciate that, to go to the places where they are. Right now, I'm not able to do it, but I believe also that will be another way that the higher power can have me bring them to me and say to them, here's a place where you can come and you can be vulnerable and you can feel safe and that you can share your pain and anguish. And I myself, as a person who understands that, one of the things about when you're in pain, you don't want to have somebody that's over you talking to you.
Right.
You want to feel as though that person has shared some of your issues also. And that's the one thing I love about the program that I have, the support part of my program, where I sit there and I will share my issues. And you can feel like, hey, wait a minute, she's not just the leader or the minister or whatever, but she also, as a woman, understands my pain. That's what I offer. And as you said, once I become healthier physically, I'll be able to go to the shelters. And I want to thank you, and I appreciate your support. That's a great idea. And that's what I would move on. Right now, I have my own Blog Talk Radio show on Saturdays. I'd like to share, if you don't mind, my information. I have my own Blog Talk Radio show on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Every Saturday, you can get me, blogtalkradio.com, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, and I'm there, and I talk to the universe. I talk to all the people globally as we're talking now to each other, and this guest, when he comes on, and I reach out to the women around the world. One thing I was blessed to have was Amnesty International sent me some information and thanked me for the support of women. So I know that there are people around the world, women around the world, who are listening to me. Also, the males, too. There's no discrimination because we all come from the universe. So I do have a phone number if anyone would like to get in touch with me. May I give that, please?
Yes, please, give the number.
Yeah, my phone number is 312-802-4743. 312-802-4743. And that's a contact with me personally. Anyone that feels that they want to contact me here in Chicago, Illinois, I'm here. I'm a spiritual counselor. I'm a spiritual teacher. I also am gifted with abilities to see people when they move from this level to the other side. That's the gift that has been given to me ever since I was a child, coming into this world, being able to see the way I see. They use the term mediumship here in America, but for those of you of culture, we know that there are people in our cultures all around the world that have these abilities, and I just am appreciative of the gift that has been given to me. So I have been being mentored by these women. Like I said, they didn't have high school diplomas. They come right out of the South, Alabama, Mississippi, and they helped me to move through my clinical depression, my depression, my abuse issues. And I just know that it can be done because it helped me. And everything we can say clinically, like you're describing, the chemical imbalance in the brain, yeah. But it's the wounded spirit, as you said, Sister Naima. So I'm here for all of you, male or female. Call me, 312-802-4743.
Wonderful. You know, we're going to have to do a regular spot that we can run on the air because we want people to every day, you know, get that information so they can constantly remember when to tune in or just be able to call you if, you know, something you say strikes them and they feel like, well, I need to talk
Thank
to her because I got
Thank
a big problem.
Thank
because,
you.
You know, that's what we do. So, yes, we'll certainly put that in motion. And, you know, we're going to
take a
quick break. We'll be right back. And thank you because
thank you.
There's somebody out there that needs to hear from you today. They need somebody who they feel like they can trust. And that's what's the most important thing, knowing that a person has been through what they've been through and isn't going to judge them harshly, but will understand. That's what people need. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Female Solution. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. If you're listening on the internet and want to join in our conversation, we're talking about justice for those who are incarcerated. We want not only to enable them to reach out to their families, but their families to be able to stay connected so that they can heal from the wounds within. We'll be right back in just a minute. Oh, we're back. You're listening to The Female Solution, and we're going to run that spot in a little while here. But we want you to give us a call, 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. If you're listening in on the internet, and we hope to hear from, Reverend Sean McMillan, but he did mention that they're actually in the process of going to the Cook County Board meeting this morning to challenge the county on its practice of charging $15 a minute for prisoners who are calling their loved ones. And it's such an exploitive thing. It's so cruel, because these are people who need to be able to stay connected. And when families are not able to talk to their loved ones, they're not able to encourage them, then the separation becomes that much more painful. And then when things happen behind prison walls, because you have some spiritually sick people that are even in positions of authority. So, you know, they know they have somebody that they can abuse with no consequences. And you send someone to jail who needs healing, and they get more wounded. They get beat by prison guards. They get beat by other prisoners. They get sexually assaulted by prisoners and even by guards sometimes. So the unfortunate reality is that our prison system just creates more sickness because it's a breeding ground for the spiritually ill. And when there's no connection with people who can come in and bring some light to the darkness, we're basically, it's like putting somebody in an environment where they catch a disease, and then when they leave that environment, they go out and spread that disease to the rest of the society, because that's what happens. You know, you might go in for some minor infraction, little drug habit that you have, maybe smoking some marijuana or whatever, or carrying some marijuana, you go in for that, and you, after going through all the abuse and everything from getting beat up to dehumanized and everything else, by the time you come out, you're so full of hurt and anger that you don't care what you do to people. So it just becomes that much easier to, you know, shoot, stab, kill somebody, just because you care even less about yourself and therefore less about other lives. And that's what we have to stop, that cycle of pain. We have to stop that cycle of brutality and crushing of the human spirit. And our prisons, really, if they were administered right, they could be places of healing where you would let people from the spiritual community come in and minister to the people. And you would let them, and like you say, Sister, you know, you talk about giving people a place where they feel safe to share what they've gone, knowing that they're not going to be judged or taken advantage of.
Yes.
If we're able to create that kind of an environment in the place where we're locking people up, and we know that there are people in there that are dangerous. I mean, they're dangerous because they've been so damaged that they're a danger to everybody until they can get well. That's really what it is. So people who have violence in them because they have experienced so much violence, you do have to isolate them until you, it's like being in the quarantine when, you know, you got a contagious disease. You know, you got to stay away from everybody until the disease has left your body, or the disease has been healed. Otherwise, you will infect everybody else. It's just like, that's how it is when people are violent. Because of anger that's out of control, because of hurt, because whatever they've gone through. I understand that is the kind of person that needs to be kept away from other people and not allowed to inflict it on other people. But most people who are in jail right now for nonviolent offenses, you know, drug use, you know, or if they got violent, it was because of being in the drug business. And that's kind of how that whole business is maintained. So if you separate people who maybe have an addiction or a financial need or whatever from those who are hurting people, like the, you know, the serial killers or the rapists and that kind of thing, then you can even treat them differently. You know, you isolate those who are a danger to others, and then those who are not, you enable them to have regular human interaction because they're really not hurting anybody. They're just breaking a law. But then you have to look at the justness of the law. You know, so all of the things that we jail people for aren't necessarily crimes that cause physical injury to anybody.
So, well, I would like to see. I know that Reverend Sharpton and the leader of NAACP and other organizations, civil rights leaders, are meeting with President Obama. They met with him yesterday, and these are some of the things that they're going to pose to him about the criminal justice system. And that I know that's one level that they're going to. Because Reverend Sharpton on his show was asking for input from people. And I listened to Reverend Jackson on a show we have here in Chicago, Ty Wamsley's show, on Sunday morning, and he talked about the fact that he talked with President Pratt Winkle, and she said that they had the contract with the telephone number, and her issue was, no, it's not right, but with the contract, if they were to break it, it would possibly, they could get sued for breaking the contract. So I like what you're saying about what the Reverend is doing and going forth to do something to challenge this business contract, this profitable, inhumane contract that the telephone company is profiting off of these people that are incarcerated. So I appreciate people like yourself who have gone into the prisons and penitentiaries and what have you to try to help them. And that's why I'm working so hard out here to be an alternative, so when they come out, they can have somewhere to come to and someone to talk to that is grassroots, but also understanding that they're the one with spirit and what is needed. One of the other things is with some monies coming down is I know a gentleman right now who was a part of a nonprofit that did receive people coming out of the incarcerated prison system, and that nonprofit diminished because there was no funding. So hopefully President Obama in some way can affect some changes, the ripple effect in this issue that Reverend Sharpton and all these civil rights leaders are bringing with him, to him about this this issue. Get some monies coming down through the federal government to the states, and it be disseminated so the nonprofits that were doing it can be reinstituted. And myself, I had another nonprofit also that dealt with education. And so many of the programs that dealt with social justice were diminished because there was no monies available. We need that. That's part of the community of everyone in the United States of America, and especially in our communities, Latino and African American. We need to have outside structures there to support those coming out of the penal system. And it's just so much that needs to be done. And I pray that at this time, with the president having his next term, that he will be able to create that ripple effect so that we in the community, the real life communities, can receive the help and support that we all need.
Yes. Yes, that is so necessary. And I'm glad that they're addressing the president. You know, and I'm hoping that this term, President Obama, can feel freer to talk about those things that he may have felt were too controversial or going to make his Republican half of the government uncomfortable because it deals with the urban community, which, you know, of course, you know, the code word for black people, black and Hispanic people. But there needs to be some real dialogue about the injustice that is perpetuated and the fact that it's got to stop. They've got to stop profiting off of our misery, our pain, our poverty. They've got to stop perpetuating the poverty. We got to admit that it's done on purpose, you know, not keep blaming people for being poor. You know, you can't take a person's livelihood and then criticize them for being poor. You know, you take away a person's job, you take away education, you take away a person's means to improve themselves, and then criticize them for being uneducated and on a lower economic level. But the people who criticize them are the people who made the policies that created it that way. You know, we create injustice and imbalance and unfairness. So the president hopefully feels free enough to just go ahead and say it without worrying about people saying, oh, now he's trying to favor the black people. Well, we've been unfavored long enough, so somebody
yes.
needs to show us some favor. So hopefully
on the back burner for so long.
Yeah, on the back burner for so long. So hopefully he can be bolder now in this second term because he doesn't have anything to lose. I mean, they can't put him out, you know. So he can go ahead and say what he needs to say and not care what the other people have to say, those who are not in sync with what is right and just and harmonious. He's got to be able to not fear the backlash because at the end of the day, I mean, he's going to do 4 years, whether they like it or not. So hopefully this time he will be able to openly embrace people who are saying things that are correct about America. People like Minister Farrakhan, which everybody's afraid of because he's not afraid to say the truth. He's not afraid to just say it. You know, he's not afraid to challenge it.
Yeah.
And so people who agree secretly can perhaps now agree openly, so that we can correct the problem. Because you can't fix any problem until you can admit it exists. You know, if we don't say what it is, then it'll never go away. And you know, those who understand what the problem is and do have some real viable solutions, they need to be financed. People who have these organizations that are helping those who need support when they come out of prison and providing housing and providing training and providing counseling, these are programs that should get the money. Why are we giving money to people who are exploiting those who are in need when we could be giving money to people who are helping those so that they can be transformed?
Yes. And I pray myself as a spiritual woman of a higher power, I say God, and that we can get that kind of support. So I had another organization, I had a nonprofit to teach, prepare people for GEDs and teach people how to read and write, 16 years old on up. It was an independent nonprofit that the higher power gave me the ability to start, and I had it for 6 years until I became ill. And I had a lot of males, young black males and women, come through my program. And I'm outside the box, and I'm outside of the structure, because this has been my journey, to be outside the structure to help the African-American community. And I did not realize how unique I was until the director of Cook County GED told me, Cynthia, you don't know how unique you are. Because I used to go to Springfield, which is the capital of the state of Illinois, and he would tell me, he said, Cynthia, you know you're the only independent nonprofit in the state of Illinois, and then you're black and female. I did not realize how unique I was. I did not realize it. I was just doing what was given to me to do, and I had a lot of people that called me. I had so many calls I couldn't keep up with them coming in for help, and I had a lot of people that came into my program, and they got their GEDs, and I had a couple of young men. One young man came back, and he told me if I hadn't been there to help him, he wouldn't have been able to get his carpentry license to take care of his family. I did not realize that he had a family, even though he was in my program, and I had other young men. So I do know that I have worked hard in the community to help not only males but females in education, and now with the wounded spirit, as we're talking about. But let me say, the bottom line for all of us working in the community is money. We cannot continue to function unless we have the financial support. And, yes, we spend money for the wars, but why won't we spend money to help the community?
That's it. That's the bottom line. Well, you know, you give your, what was it Dick Gregory said? Whoever you give your money to, that's who you give your power to. So if we're empowering people to kill, but we're not empowering them to bring peace, then that's why we have war and not peace. So we have to take our money and pay for the healing of the spirit, pay for the help of those who've been deprived, pay those who are helping in that effort so that we can change the society we live in. We can't keep expecting things to get better and the people who have the means to make things better are deprived of the financial support that they need to make it happen. I mean, because if you're out here doing ministry work, well, you got to eat, you got to pay for a place to stay, you know, you got to pay for health care. So you need to get paid for what you do. Otherwise, you can't do it. You know, everything can't be volunteer because we live in a system that we use money to buy and trade our necessities. So we have to empower those who are doing positive things to make positive change so that they can continue to do it. That's the intelligent thing to do. But for some reason, well, we know what the reason is. The reason is the people who don't want to finance these things is because they're profiting off of the other things. I mean, the gun industry is profiting from the crime. So, you know, they continue to finance the dysfunctional behavior because at the end of the day, they get paid more money. And you look at the whole criminal justice system, people who get paid. You have the police, the everybody in the court system, from the judge to the bailiff to the lawyer, the prison guards, the warden, the administrative staff. I mean, all of these people in this whole system that get paid by those who are spiritually wounded and unable
yes.
to lift themselves out of the darkness. And so the people who maintain that get paid. And that's what's got to end. We have to have as our intention, as our goal, not to have anybody in jail. And that's doable. You don't have to have prison. You don't have to have people in jail. You don't have to have people that have to be isolated away from society because they're a threat to everybody or because they're so wrongdoing and out of control that they're disruptive. You don't have to have that kind of person. We don't have to keep greeting those kind of people. And that's the whole thrust of my book, The Female Solution, is to raise a different kind of human being. If you raise them with love and give them guidance, give them support, they will not be the wrongdoing person that has to be incarcerated. It's a simple thing, but we've got to have that as the goal in order to make it happen. And of course, I want the listeners to go to my website, www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And you can, of course, order a copy of The Female Solution along with other books that are enlightening, uplifting, and educational in terms of helping us understand the journey we have been through in this country, having been people forcibly taken from Africa and having lost so much of that sense of our identity and still recovering from the trauma of being forced at the threat of death and beaten and so forth, forced to labor and raped and murdered publicly and all those horrifying things that have been done to us. We're still recovering from the pain of that. And that's so much of what we're dealing with in our communities, with the dysfunction in our families and the low
yes.
self-esteem and the sense of hopelessness. So all of these things we have the power to reverse, but we have to have the intention to reverse it. And it first comes with acknowledging it, acknowledging that this is what the problem is, and then we can address it. So it really means having to call people out and say, well, look, why are you profiting off of our pain? Why are you making it profitable for people to go to jail? You know, why are you keeping a system that dehumanizes people? Because those who do it are themselves spiritually wounded. They
yes.
are themselves defective. When you purposely hurt people, it's because something is missing in you. And this is where we got to take a look at the leadership. You know, they have a problem. They have a spiritual problem. Because otherwise, they would not be so blind to the fact that they're hurting other people.
And you know what I think is important, too, is just when I recognize that as a coming from the spirit realm, and we can talk about that, it was people listen to my blog talk radio show, I come from the point of the spirit and not through a traditional religious concept, but just from the anointing that I was given coming into this world and the work I'm doing as an African descended person, that we need to understand that it takes more than just what's on the outer. It takes what it takes to learn about the inner. And one of the things in our culture as African descended people is that we have been broken down so terribly because of slavery throughout the years, we don't even remember. I have a remembrance of Mother Africa in its purity. There is things that I teach about the history of Africa before Christianity or even Islam came to Africa. We don't even realize there was a prehistory before both of
yes.
these traditional religions came to Africa. And I was given the information about that. There's a particular professor, John S. Mbiti, who wrote a book called African Traditional Religion and Faith. And it talked about free Africa before any of the traditional religions came to Africa. You know,
yeah.
we don't even understand that. It is so distant and non-existent in our memory that for 300 years of slavery, they broke us. They broke us in the sense of any knowledge of who and what we were. But our spirit, that's something we need to recognize. African people, this is where everyone comes from. We are the mothers and fathers of everyone in the world. When they're finding the skeletal Lucy, there were many skeletal remains of the pre-humans which were out of Mother Africa. Everyone comes out of Mother Africa. Our geography classes, do they teach that all the continents were together? And they have to tell the truth now, that we are the original people from that particular geographical plane on this planet called Earth. Africa, as we call it, which is really not the real name in the African culture, but a name given to that part, that continent. We all come Asian, whatever. So there's so much of the history that we do not know of world history. They're cutting that out of school. It's almost like they don't want to teach the reality of who and what we all are. That part there. So what I'm saying to everyone that is listening to us today, that African descended people, we as a people are the beginning of every culture. We have a great history that we don't even remember or are aware of. I get so passionate about this. This is what I teach. If anyone wants to be a part of my classes that I have here in Chicago and you're listening, call me again at 312-802-4743. 312-802-4743. I want you also to look me up on Facebook, Cynthia Marie Williams. Look me up on YouTube, Cynthia Marie Williams. And Sister Naima, you and those like you, Reverend Jackson, the other reverends, we understand because it's in us to know that we deserve better and that we have a rich history as African peoples. But we also are multicultural. Let me share this with everyone. We particularly are talking about Africanism because we are from that culture, from our memory of what and who we are today. But we understand spiritually that we all come from the universe. And I say always on my program and to everyone, we are flowers from the spiritual realm. It goes so deep. Yeah. It goes so deep that we don't even understand it.
Yes, and that's part of what makes us confused, because we don't really have a real true understanding of the depth of what it means to be a living soul. You know, you can't, if you're taught by people who are ignorant, then you will be as ignorant as they are. So people who are teaching that the world is only 6 years old, how can they possibly be scholars that we're following and we're learning from? They have no understanding of life itself. And this universe is so many billions and billions of years old in terms of Earth time, but you look at time itself as beyond the rotation of the Earth, because the Earth is just one tiny planet in the universe. So when we come from people who had understanding of the universe, and so their knowledge was far beyond what Europeans are teaching right now. That's why it's so out of balance. What they teach is so out of balance because their knowledge is so limited and so disconnected from the spirit realm. So we know that our ancestors taught that life is eternal, and that's why they spoke of the ancestors, because they know spirits don't die. You move from one realm to the next. We taught that. Our traditional African religions taught that. This is why we're able to see beyond the physical world. And many of us have those gifts because we understood that life, the life force in us, is the Spirit of God, and it is eternal. So this is where, well, of course, we're out of time now, but this is where we want to bring people to in that understanding so that they can know that they're part of a greater spirit. They're part of the greater whole, and so there's no need for them to have self-hatred because they are a part of the great spirit, which is the spirit of love.
Yes.
So I want to thank you for being who you are and doing what you do. And we've got to go now. Of course, tomorrow we'll return. And tomorrow we're going to talk to an author that's going to give us more insight on that concept of family so that we can understand the principle of unity of the family. And
yes.
We'll be here again in the morning, 7 a.m. Join us. And we're looking forward to a great conversation. And until then, we want you all to have a blessed day. I'm Naima Lateef, your host, and Minister Cindy Marie Williams. We'll see you again tomorrow on The Female Solution.
Yes. I'm going to take the style. I'm like,